It is 10:02 when we want to start.
Hi, Robert.
Aaron, it is 10:02 when we want to start. Separate.
Okay, I believe we are all here, so good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the Licensing Advisory Committee in order. It is 10:03 a.m. on January 22nd, or 26th, sorry, I can't read my own. Can I get a roll call, as I go down the roll? Angelica Cogliano? Not here. Callie Daly?
Here.
Christy Michonne?
Here.
Deb Smith?
Here.
Donnie Daly?
Here.
Emily Esquivel?
Here.
Kelly Wouters?
Here.
Sandy Parent?
Here.
I'm Aaron Reed. I'm here. We have, I guess, the quorum that we're
doing. Yeah. So,
okay. Anything else that we need? You want to introduce?
Is Angelica not here? No. Okay, I didn't get any response that she wasn't going to be here. I don't have any reason that she's...
Yeah, I'm not sure why she's here, but
I why think she's not
it
here.
Would be good to excuse her absence.
Okay. I didn't know we had to excuse her.
No, that's a new thing.
Do you have your...
parents' note?
Yes, yeah. Do you have your the motions document that in your Govenda? If you could open that, I have a script on there for you.
Oh, the motion. Is there a motion? That blah blah blah.
Yeah, in the Govenda, if you open the motions document, the language there it just says, "Is there a motion to excuse committee member?"
Oh yeah, gotcha.
Cogliano's.
Okay.
Absence.
Is there a motion to excuse committee member Angelica Cogliano's absence?
I will move to excuse her.
Okay, got a motion. Is there a second? Okay, motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, then her absence is approved. Y'all want to go ahead and make introductions? Or?
Sure. So it's great to see everyone here. I feel like this is the fullest house we've had in a while. So that's great. We have with us a new attorney. She's not a new attorney, but she's new to us, sort of. Veena Mohan is joining us from the Attorney General's office, where she's practiced administrative law for 14 years. And interestingly, before I was hired to serve the commission, Veena was the second chair to the person that the AG assigned to the Forensic Science Commission way back when Sam Bassett was the chair and then John Bradley. So Veena actually at one point was advising the commission, and then I was hired, so the AG's office no longer advised. We went to them for some things now and again, but mostly Veena was then reassigned to 15 boards or commissions, a lot. She served a lot of boards through the years, so she's an expert in administrative law, which is a specialty unto itself. And so we asked Veena to take a look at everything we do, and she made some suggestions, and that's why you have... We like to excuse absences because that way, people, I think there's not a perception if people need to be gone for trial or whatever that they're somehow derelict in their duty. So we try to, that was a suggestion.
That's great.
This is Veena, and she's with us.
Welcome.
A quarter of the time. She's not full time with us. She splits her time between us and the JVCC, which is the Judicial Branch Certification Commission, which has authority over court reporters, guardians, process servers, and court interpreters. So I'm sure some of you guys run into from time to time.
Right.
So that's all I had for, and you know us, we're still here.
Okay, great. Then moving on to the second agenda item is to review and adopt the minutes. I'm assuming everybody had a chance to review the minutes. Is there any discussion on the minutes that's drafted? If not, is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Did y'all excuse me last time?
That was not a thing. we're not retroactively.
It was a trial.
You did actually have a good excuse. I gave you and reported to me last time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in a different state than last time.
Yeah. Yeah. The far state. Yeah.
So is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
I will move to adopt the minutes.
Okay, I've got a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, minutes are adopted. All right, so moving on to item 3, the administrative update. I will pass this over to you guys, and you just run with it as you see.
Cool. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Took a snapshot of our current licensees as of January 11th to prepare for this meeting, and the total at that time was 1,275. Of that, this is including 5 different discipline areas, non-interpreting, provisional, regular, uncommon forensic analysis, and temporary. If you're looking at the PowerPoint on Govinda, look at page 2. The non-interpreting licenses stand at 271, broken amongst 3 different disciplines as displayed. Page 3. Starting with our provisional licensees. This is the smallest group that we have, standing at 6, broken down by 4 different disciplines. Page 4 would start the display of our largest part of the pie of the regular licensees. That includes analysts and technicians, 993. Of this group, there are 28 different disciplines and discipline combinations, as displayed on the pages 4, 5, and 6. Moving on to the next page of 7, our regular licensees. We have expected license renewals for the end of this year for the 2-year period of 2023 to 2025, 206, broken down by the month as displayed. A lot better than last time. Another category that we added is we identified analysts and technicians that are no longer associated with a laboratory. They're what we call inactive and undesignated. They have the eligibility to come back and renew if they return to the forensic science field with an accredited laboratory. These are 25 and are spread out over the next 12 months as indicated on the page. A small group that we deal with would be the regular uncommon forensic analysts. Have 3 licensees split between 2 different laboratories.
Out of curiosity, what does the ARL Biopharma do? Do you have any recollection?
I do not.
Okay, just curious.
It's new to me, too. Yeah. And last would be the temporary licensees, 2 licensees with 1 laboratory. Both are materials trace analyst.
Okay.
Great, thank you.
Can we back up one?
Sure.
On page 8, is that 4 or 3?
Let me get back to it.
Oh, yeah, I see this.
My mistake. It should be 3. It's not 4. That would be a Rodney goof. Sorry about that.
Which page are you on?
Page 8.
At the top it says 4, but then when it's broken down it's just
3. Oh, I see.
I went to a small high school. I can't count.
I think Deb's the only one to talk about.
Hey, I'm glad.
Can you see if this will go on there so you can display their licensee database? I think it wouldn't show it online.
Anything else
that
we want to go through?
It's a USB.
I think they're trying to display something. I'm not sure what it is. Screenshots.
Is that new firmware or is it available?
Alex said it just would work, and of course.
Anything?
Maybe firmware available. Click share to update.
I'm not seeing your screen. Trying to share with them.
Yeah, I wanted to just show the database. Has everyone been to our new licensee database? If you go to look up a licensee now, you go to our website, just txcourts.gov.
FSC.txcourts.
You can just go to txcourts.gov, and it'll go to the main courts website. If you go to organizations, we're working on getting it to fsc.texas.gov to point to it, too.
Yeah, if you go to licensing, and then
fsc.texas.gov will go there, too. Okay. And then if you go to licensees,
and look for
you can now... This is what our licensee database looks like. We no longer have the table and the downloadable spreadsheet, although we can get you that information if you need it. We've had some people request that information. But we have here each licensee's profile posted. You can view their full licensee history. If you open up the individual's profile, you can get a copy of their certificate here. So a member of the public can get a copy of their certificate, and also the individual licensee can view it. It's a nice colored copy of the certificate that looks just like the one that they would have hanging in their office. Do you have a question about it?
Our address is wrong.
I already pointed that out.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Donna.
One of our supervisors complimented you guys on it, and he said it was very well done and very easy to search.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
I try to click on my license certificate and I get a 404.
Does that have anything to do with it?
Mine came up.
Yours
so.
Came up?
Yes.
We all
need to
do
that.
I'm glad you're.
Yeah,
we
can
park
the They were trying to get it to display and they couldn't.
Is that the software that we use?
So if you notice any issues with it, just let us know.
Like the
but yes, I did see the HFSC's old address. I have already asked them to correct it. And you also were in the process of trying to make sure all the addresses are current, and then we're going to add the lab website.
Oh, okay.
Does
so
this show?
Can go straight. Go ahead.
Does this show previous licensees as well, or just the current?
This shows previous data and current. So you can look up historical licensee information here. And in fact, I think why some of the addressee information is wrong is because we have not reconciled all the accredited lab information yet. So that piece of the database is not ready yet. And that is our next project, to get that data ready, to get it, make sure it has integrity, to make sure it's ready to go live. We haven't taken that data and compared it with what we've been making updates to as we've gone along. The address for HFSC shouldn't have been wrong because it's right on the spreadsheet that we have and all that. I don't know what happened there. If there was a licensee profile that had the wrong address there, but it definitely should be corrected.
I think the nice thing is that some people want this report.
So yeah, and they now the lawyer can just print it out.
Mine doesn't work. So several of them.
Okay, we'll get on it.
Some do.
Which one? Can I? Or you can just email them. You're welcome to just email them to us, and we can put in a ticket
some of them,
with
the link just says license
database.
Certificate. Those work, but some of the ones that have a date in them don't work.
Have a date in them?
In the link, yeah. I'll send you one.
Yeah, you can email them to us. And I would copy Rodney, too, because he's been helping me a lot with the
I'm actually
stuff.
Looking at Kelly's right now trying to fix it.
You are.
That's customer service.
It bugs me. I don't like that either.
So So you're saying that, but the information looks right. You're just saying that the certificate
is
not coming
up.
It's giving an error.
Right.
Yeah, I see what you mean. We'll get those fixed.
But overall, I think we're really pleased with like the aesthetic and the way they designed the thing. And I'm glad you all agree. But if you have feedback, we're definitely accepting feedback, and I think that the database folks want to hear from you too.
And then each one of these will go live after, you know, they're working on these too at the same time. Is Cindy pulled away to work on something?
Right now, while they have time, we should definitely get them any changes now, because I know that they're not working on anything else right now.
You said it showed previous licensees
as well? It should show his inactive licensees.
Not if you filter by lab, because I did the same thing. Because I'm expired, but since I'm no longer licensed under a lab, it shows up separate. Okay, anything else administratively?
I think that's it, Aaron. Just let me look at the
Can
agenda.
Can you say that again? Because I want to get in my brain why
that
that's
again?
Not coming up. Yeah. Again.
Sorry,
so
that was a dad joke.
you just searched for yourself.
I searched first off Bear County.
Okay.
Right? And I scanned down Bear County. And it's just all the current licensees. It's not like previous licensees under Bear County. Right?
Okay.
So it's only filtering based on who's current for this lab. So then I wiped Bear County. Or actually, I searched for my name and Bear County got nothing, right? So then I wiped Bear County and just went with me, and I showed up as myself because I'm no longer licensed as an analyst for Bear County.
So can you make a note of that, Lee? Because we should be able to see both
expired
and active, all that. If you search under the lab, their whole, every licensee that they have, whether current or we need to talk to Brett about that. The challenging thing is when people move labs and then who,
right.
You know, then should any previous employer show up? But we just need to talk to them about that for sure. What
would they all be, or did they go from another lab to another lab?
Their profile will show it. The question that I have, based on what Aaron just said, is whether the search, like, so I'm just thinking it from the perspective of the public. So if I'm a member of the public and I know Aaron's name, that's one thing. But if I just want to see, like, my bigger interest as a lawyer is going to be seeing the whole history of the lab's licensees. Because I may not know individual names or any of that stuff.
Well, or if you're an attorney and you're checking to make sure that, like, you call a witness, you want to make sure that they were licensed
at that lab at that time. Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you can't see Aaron there, then you may wrongfully assume as a lawyer that there's some problem.
Right.
But
surprised.
You would see him if you looked him up by name.
By name.
And you can search him by name.
But that's
you just
right.
wouldn't
right.
be able to
name.
Search him by lab.
Right, but
right.
that's my point, is that we should be able to do both.
You'd be able to search his name and see that he worked at Fort Worth, though. The full history would be there. It would show that he worked at Fort Worth. What she couldn't do was just look up Fort Worth PD and have her name come up.
Right, and I would like that to be part of it.
Yeah, I think both
would be helpful. Yeah.
One question I had on the administrative update, I don't know if you had, or if it's going to be met somewhere else. There was that question as to whether somebody met a specific standard for a class. Were we going to cover that later?
That person went on and is taking the course, so we don't.
Okay.
It's a non-issue. It went moot. They actually were already enrolled in Bussini's course. They told me, they're like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and finish it.
Okay. So that's like outstanding coursework evaluation, except no docs.
No docs,
right.
Yeah, but there's nothing for it. Yeah.
Okay, let's get. So we're still on admin, right?
We are.
I think we're.
Do you have anything else?
I do not. Lee, do you have anything else?
I don't. I looked at it again. I don't have anything else.
Okay. There's nothing currently for item 4.
So we can move on to discuss launch of remote administration of the licensing exam effective January 1st. Anybody want to pick that?
Do you want to talk about the exam?
Yeah, so we launched the remote exam. Now everyone that signs up for the test now has to take it remotely, and it's very individually focused. So the onus is no longer on the lab to administer the test. I think a lot of the laboratories are still taking the responsibility to administer the test and still working that way. I know the Houston Forensic Science Center is still doing that because I've worked with Donna on helping their people to administer the test a lot. And so some laboratories are setting up certain workstations, and so we've worked with them to get logins and to have certain computers that we know can work with the Respondus software, because there's some security issues, especially at PDs that have, like, high security softwares that are not going to let you. Basically, what Respondus does is it breaks into the computer and locks down everything else that's happening. Because it's a very high security software that runs a program that shuts everything else down and records all the activity that you're doing. I mean, that's basically like the highest thing you can do to your computer. It's almost like a virus that's infecting your computer, and you're telling it, yes, it's okay to do that. And so I think it's understandable that a lot of the PDs are running into security issues when they try to install this for the first time, the day of the test or the day before the test. Like, they really have to get IT help, and they have to do it far in advance of the test, and further more than 2 days in advance of the test. So Rodney and I have really been working with them on getting it done, at least trying to do it at least 7 days in advance of the test. But it's remotely administered, and we don't have much control over, we haven't been flexible in letting people take down that Respondus piece of it, because that's the only way we can ensure that the test is secure, regardless of whether a lab director tells us, well, I'm administering it, I'm doing this. I haven't even asked permission to bend on making exceptions for it, because across the board, I think the software is really our only way to make sure that the exam is being administered fairly and securely. And we've already, you know, this board has made a decision that that's the way that we're going to administer the test. And so we've just been trying to move forward with doing it that way. But the test is now administered through this remote software with Sam Houston State University. One thing that we have been able to gain a little bit more flexibility on that we think will help make the process for registration easier that people have found frustration with is we didn't have much control over rescheduling exams when people found failures with the software or whatever. And so we had to wait for Sam Houston to, like, reschedule the tests. We weren't able to be flexible on that. Now Rodney has control over rescheduling those dates. We don't have to wait for them to respond on that. And so we think you'll find that it'll be a little bit more smooth if you do have to reschedule a test date or something like that. And so we thank you for your patience as we've tried to work through some of the kinks in launching the remote test. We don't have flexibility in being able to, like, take down the security part of the piece of it, because that is the administering the test is, you know, that's the big part of it, keeping it secure and keeping the questions secure and things like that. If we want to change course on how we administer it and go back to administering it in person, I think that could be a different conversation, but right now that's...
So in the instances where, like, an organization's IT department isn't allowing, are you mm-hmm. people just taking in on their just personal devices, or how are you all working around it then?
I've never had I don't think we've ever had a situation where they weren't able to do it, right? They always get in, or they always, I think it's just the frustration of
they are
having to figure it out.
I had a couple of people that wanted to do it from home since they had problems at their office because mm-hmm. of IT security.
Because, like, for us, unless it's a self-extracting program or whatever, we don't have the authorization to install anything. Mm-hmm. We need to have BCIT allow it. And I can tell you that BCIT, right now, it would take forever to get an approval for something like that to take over their device. You know, so for us, it may be that we would just have to have them take it on a personal device, which, again...
Maybe that's what they're doing then. Yeah, they're just...
Yeah, so I have gotten some feedback from SWIFTS that Dr. Bernard runs about this issue, because Dallas County IT maybe as may take as long and be as hard to convince as what you're describing
right.
in Bexar County.
Right.
So I think we are going to get some requests to allow the old system
to take it on
because they would rather proctor it and sign all the forms than deal with the responders.
IT department.
Than deal with the
yeah.
I mean, that's a little. I wasn't going to say.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's fine.
No, because I think part of it too is it's not. If I'm understanding right, Aaron, it's not just like the crime lab has an IT person you can go to. Like you got to go to the county.
It would have to go. It would have to be a ticket would have to be put into the BCID, and it would have to go in front of a change review board, and they would have to then you know discuss all of that. And I mean, that's when you're going to get the head of security of IT involved. And generally,
wow.
they're going to be very like, look, it's not worth the risk. We're not going to
mm-hmm.
allow it. I mean, that's just
yeah.
what
mm-hmm.
I would guess.
That's the same I thought one was doing.
Yeah.
So people, I mean, I don't see why people can't take it on their personal devices. I think
it's a personal license, right?
DPS,
so, I mean,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
DPS at one point was considering having laptops just for that purpose. I'm not sure what
I think that's what you were.
I don't know.
I don't. No, we just have a couple of offices that
mm-hmm.
we're just going to have the software installed so that it doesn't have to be on everybody's laptop. And they
mm-hmm.
can just go into the
yes.
office, close
mm-hmm.
the door, take the test,
yeah.
and then be done with it.
That's what DPS had talked about doing. I'm not sure that's how it worked out.
I don't know. I know we just talked about it just recently that there's still issues and like the timing that needs to be, you know, from whenever they want to take the test and they have to, the testee needs to make sure that they, you know, request to be installed on the computer, and it takes some time
mm-hmm.
for it to be installed.
Yes, I think we just need to sort of continue the conversation about what makes the most sense for people. I mean, Respondus
mm-hmm.
is generally, I mean, that's what universities use mm-hmm. to ensure that people are taking exams without cheating, essentially. And, I mean, I think if we can figure out a way to give people some options, depending on how difficult it is to execute, that would probably be the best approach. But we would need to talk about how that looks staffing-wise. And I'm honestly, Aaron, like it would never occur to me that software like that would have to go all the way to a board for
yeah.
approval.
Yeah,
so
well, I can't even install like printers anymore. You know, so I can't even map an individual to a printer. Or they've locked things down so much
yeah.
that basically constantly having to put in tickets, and we don't have anybody on site. So it may take weeks for somebody to actually come on site. Now, you might be able to have somebody remote in and do something, but it would have to have been approved prior, and they would have to understand what they're doing to do that.
Okay, so this is really helpful feedback, and I think we need to consider all this stuff when we think about how to approach the exams. Does anyone have any other...
question about the software?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the one where you have to have a video, like cameras?
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the full
yeah.
deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything.
And
what kind of environment does it have to be in when you're taking the test? I suppose sound and ambient noise will trigger it, or is it?
Yeah, the security instructions say that. I mean, the room has to be quiet, and yeah, it will be triggered. Like if your dog walks by, it'll flag.
And does that invalidate the test, or just?
No, it'll have a flag, and then Rodney or I will look at the flag and see that it was just your dog or whatever.
Yeah. Don't take it at Starbucks, right?
Yeah. I think
then, yeah, the red flags, if they see move, if it sees movement, it detects what it thinks is movement or something, that would flag. I mean, you know, we had our sister agency here uses it as well, and there was an example where the person's like spouse kept walking back and
mm-hmm.
forth and back and forth, and they said, "You got to retake this test. Like we can't." You
okay,
know.
So I don't know, somebody else shouldn't really be in the room even because
no.
if they walk in the background, it's gonna. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a situation where the person was in the room so much
mm-hmm.
that it was just like they couldn't allow it to proceed. So
it was the same when I took my ASQ certification.
They had all those requirements, and they also wanted you in a room where you didn't have access to books and literature, like
the same thing.
You have to scan the room to show that there was nothing around.
I had to pick up a chair and tell them a chair.
Wow.
Yeah. It goes through a whole thing at the beginning where you have to just take your camera and you do that and you show them there's nothing around you, and then you're not supposed to exit the room, but if there's an emergency, you just document it and you say you have to use the restroom for whatever reason. You can ask for permission, like if you have exceptions, like if you're breastfeeding or something like that, if there's special circumstances. We have all these security instructions. It screen records, so like anything, any activity that you're doing on the screen, it's going to record that. You have to have your face in the screen, so if you're looking down or you do this for more than a few seconds, even if you're looking at your notes, it'll document that. I mean, you can be looking at your notes, and you are permitted to do some side notes and have two pieces of scratch paper, but it's going to flag it. It'll say that you look down for a certain amount of time, and then it'll want us to just look at it and see. I've never seen anything that was, you know, more than just an anomaly in a test so far, but we've only had, you know, maybe 12, 15 people take the test so far, so.
How long has it taken you guys to get through the review and get scores back out?
Not long, right? I think it's only, like, the longest it's taken me. We had a busy time the past couple weeks, was a week and a half to get somebody their score. I guarantee that, like, because I might have a busier time where it takes me longer. I'm planning to transition the grading part of it to Maggie and Rodney soon, so maybe it'll be even quicker than that, hopefully, once I can do that.
Okay. Now, I have a question before we pass. It says we're going to close the license exam one. Is it going to still be available, like somebody can just get CE or something by watching it? Because I thought there was some pretty good stuff in there. But we can talk about it.
I don't know that we, so the materials that are in there for the second one, you mean whether we should allow people to watch the old stuff?
If somebody wanted to for like credit, not take an exam, but just listen to the material, I think we should make it available.
I think we would need to review it all to see if it's current enough.
Okay.
Like, sure. So like, here's an example. In that first one, we had the TDCAA roundtable that had all those, you know, most of those electeds are long gone.
I thought you were talking about the one that you and I did. That's what I'm talking about.
No, that's still there.
Okay.
Still
all right. Sorry, man. Never mind.
But I don't think that the first exam materials are still available, right?
Yeah, I agree.
No, the first exam is completely closed out for registration, and things, so nobody should be accessing.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else on item 5?
No.
If not, let's move on to item 6. Discuss progress on the development of the Texas Forensic Science Commission's voluntary licensure program for unaccredited forensic disciplines, including various latent print, digital multimedia analyst, voluntary license programs, and discussion of blah, blah, blah. It says no docs, but
it should have. Okay. There is a document. They should not say no docs.
Okay.
We got through the digital and Friction Ridge programs. As you know, this is the proposed, you know, accepted version. Now, Sandy pointed something out to us, which I think is a really fair point, which I was concerned about when we were originally looking at this, which is the Friction Ridge OSAC standards are in various, they're not done, cooked, baked yet, right? Now, the argument that Henry Swafford made when we raised that, and Henry was consulting with us on this, and Jack Flanders was there, and a bunch of people in the community, and they were awesome. But the argument that Henry made was like, none of them were ever really cooked, done. You know, like, that's the problem with these standards, right? So, and he felt very comfortable, and the other folks who were participating seemed to agree that they are well enough along that we could expect people to be complying with them. So the question I have is whether we should consider, instead of putting them, references to these standards in the rule, having the commission post the standards on the website that we're expecting compliance with and not have them embedded in the rule. This is something that I meant to talk with Dina about. So I think we're going to think about that, and then we may need to do a rule revision if we think we can. If we think that we can issue a rule that says that they shall comply with OSAC registry standards, a list of which will be available on the commission's website, you know, clearly. And what's nice about that is we could put links to the ones in their current, and, you know, information about their current, where they are in the path along the SDO process. So I think that's what you were saying, right, mostly, Sandy, is that those, they were OSAC registry proposed. Then we got told at the FSSP meeting, the last one I was at, which was held in this room, actually, we hosted here in Austin. They told us, oh, they're going to the SDO now, finally, and it was like everybody clapped. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, now they're at the SDO, which complicates our lives a lot.
And I saw that two of them were at the SDOs, and I couldn't find that conclusion document and where the status of that one was. And I feel like that conclusion document has probably a lot more comments around it, so I'm not quite sure if, like, what we see today is what's going to be the final one. And I know our laboratories have been preliminary discussions as to how we're going to adopt it what parts can we adopt, what parts do we have concerns with. But not knowing what the final product will be, and I don't know, like, it might be some time still on that conclusion once.
Mm-hmm. I suspect it will be.
Yeah. Morning.
Good morning. I'm sorry, guys. I got stuck before.
Oh, it's all right. You were at 2.
So now we should mark Angela present. Angelica. I'm sorry. I said Angela. I meant Angelica.
And then also, just to know that, like, can you just adopt the document in part and still be in compliance? And then do you have to adopt it in mostly? Or, like, as to what point are you in compliance?
That's the concern I have, because even when OSAC was proposing these and really promoting them, I feel like it got a little overlooked, but they were like, you're not expected to adopt this document in totality. If it doesn't apply to your laboratory, you have a legitimate reason not to do XYZ. So I think, A, that needs to be considered, and then B, what if we said something along the lines, like, these verbiage, like, when available or when approved on the registry, these shall be followed, things like that. That way, when they do come up and they do get approved, regardless of what it's gone through in between and how many changes it's made in between to get there, then it'll say, once it's on the registry, this is what you would be compliant with.
So the group that we called in to advise us, my recollection is they felt pretty strongly that we should not wait until they're on the registry, that they were in shape right now where they can be adopted, because they've been through, I mean, they're, according to Henry, these are standards that are adoptable as they currently stand, and that they may change, but he didn't foresee that they were going to change in a way that was going to trip up any of the labs in any meaningful sense. And so I think the fear is that if we just sort of punt it down the road, we have no quality metrics at all for the labs that aren't accredited, that are doing friction ridge. And so the answer may just be that we don't want to have a voluntary friction ridge program yet, because the standards aren't far enough along in the process that we feel comfortable having those as the benchmark. We would have to go back to commissioners on that. I mean, Sarah Kerrigan at the last commission meeting asked a number of questions about the documents and where they stood, and she felt comfortable with the approach. I'm on the FSSB, and I still don't fully understand everything that is all the various permutations and why some documents take 16 years to get through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The friction ridge community is very very hot about some of these topics. Like, some of the documents and the comments are A lot. I think that's just the right word. There are a lot of comments and a lot of Friction Ridge folks who are very against some of the changes that are being proposed by Henry Swofford and group.
That may be, but we've looked at them and we feel actually that it's really a step in the right direction and it's necessary because it actually has a linear method that requires documentation of what is in the black box of people's minds. So we feel pretty strongly that these documents are the right direction for the community. I'm not saying that there aren't things about it that may need adjustments, but in terms of the philosophy of, I mean, we have Glenn Langenberg advising us on a case. We have, you know, Carl Perrien and Roberts looked at these things, you know, and they really are, when you are trying to look at an old case, which we're doing in one example, you see that there's nothing to fall back on. Nobody's around. You have no earthly idea what people's thought process was. And this really forces that discipline. So if for nothing else, they're super helpful in that.
I'm just saying that's. I think that's why it takes so long, or why it hasn't taken so long, because there's so much.
You have not you, but is there issues with the documentation or issues with the like? We don't like this conclusion matrix thing.
Definitely issues with the conclusion matrix. Going from the three-bend conclusion that's been accepted for a long time now, and then moving into a. Expanding the inconclusive options, the five-bend conclusions, there's a lot of animosity with that. And one of the things that was asked in one of the presentations that I believe it was that gave was, if we as a laboratory decide that we don't want to include those extra two bends in the middle, can we still only have the two extremes and inconclusive? And he said, yeah, if that is what your laboratory... But a lot of people I've talked to, a lot of examiners, are not fully aware of that, right? They're not aware, oh, you mean I can still do those three. I don't have to accept the other two in the middles. And I think it made me think, well, maybe that message is not getting, somehow is not getting to our examiners, because automatically they're going, well, I don't like this, this is new and different, or it doesn't fit with what we think, or blah, 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 right? For whatever reasons, there's a lot of, like, hitting a wall, running into a wall with that. But I think if we were able to somehow promote, I don't know if this is the time to talk about that or if it's later, but if we could somehow really put out there, hey, the document doesn't have to be accepted in totality, you know, if there are reasons or functional purpose for not having... For example, the conclusion document, for not adopting all five conclusions, I think that message needs to be understood.
That's where it kind of gets difficult, though, is that when you start allowing for voluntary compliance to parts but not all, you know, and given the subjectivity of, like, well, if you have a valid reason for doing so, okay, based on who, right? And we've had a similar issue with one of the standards for, like, DNA, I forget the name of it, but essentially creating a database of anybody that potentially ever came in contact with his evidence, right? Well, that's way outside of our ability to control, right? I mean, we can maybe do something internally, right? Once the evidence hits our door, we can't collect standards from the crime scene techs that collected the evidence because they're not part of our laboratory, you know. So I mean, once you start going down the road to say, okay, well, if you have a valid reason for not doing it, that's fine. Okay, but who makes that determination? Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think maybe that's a hazy spot of it. My understanding is generally it's okay to be more strict. It's not okay to be less strict, right?
Right.
So if we say, well, you have five potential, you know, but if you only do three of those, the two extremes and one in the middle, that's more strict. Right? If you think about it that way.
I'm not a subject matter expert, but let's say you had a marginal print in blood, you know, and your lab needs 12 points. Old school, right? And it's 10 points. Wouldn't you want to be able to say, I can't really say it's an identification, but it leans that way, it's one, you know, I forget how they phrase it, but it could come in handy for cases where
you're not quite there,
but everything else matches, and it's just information for the trier fact to consider.
I completely agree.
Okay.
And so from a perspective, so I'm trying to look at it from different perspectives, right? From the perspective of the legal side,
right.
100% agree.
Okay.
Right? That's however, and maybe not however, but on another perspective, and maybe even a legal perspective too, if I say, well, I can't quite say, I can't go there, could be this person, I'm associating this person's name with this case, mm-hmm. and for some reason it turns out to be wrong, it's not, which we may never know, but we're associating this person with this crime, and thus are we infringing on that person? Are we jumping out there? We have officers who say, well, I'm going to take that and run with it, because we can't control that investigative side of things. Is that person now implicated in something, potentially, that maybe they really had nothing else to do because we could not be confident in that conclusion, right? So that's just the two different perspectives I try to look at it from.
So the two things about, because firearms had a similar thing, right? We have
improvised,
right? Yeah. And for a while, our ASB/OSAC doc was headed in that direction of having the five. They backed off of that, and they are not going to do that anymore, as far as I know. Last one I saw did not have that. So that is one, my concern of having all the labs go out and adopt these five, and then the latent print community does the same thing that the firearms community did and back off that. The other thing, what you were saying, Deb, about, like, I'm leaning this way, but I could be wrong, right, which is why we say inclusive, right, with the, and of course it's firearms, it's completely different than latent prints, but with, but the FBI, their second big study that they did where they looked at error rate and reproducibility and repeatability, they looked at that, like, what do people say? They're leaning one way or the other, because they clarified, like, am I leaning one way, but I'm still saying inconclusive? Am I leaning towards elimination, or am I leaning towards ID? We're frequently wrong.
You're like, talking about AIMS, too.
Mm-hmm, AIMS, too.
Did you read the study that looks at just repeatability and reproducibility?
They haven't published that. Is it?
Okay. No, I mean, not the AIMS authors, but there's another mathematician who looked at it. I'll send it to you.
It's a reevaluation. Yeah. It's pretty interesting. I've sent it to you.
You sent it to me.
It's, yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super mathy, so I'm warning you.
So I did a very, very crude survey a couple years ago. I think I sent it to Dawn at one point, and it was basically listing out these five potential conclusions and kind of wanting to get a feel for what does this mean for you as a lay person or as someone who is not a subject matter expert involved, right? I sent this to other forensic scientists. I sent it to people that I just know, you know, that are not in forensics at all. Just to kind of get a feel for it, and the outcome of that was, if we say the inconclusive, but I see similarities, or however that verbiage is, the overwhelming response was, okay, so it's him.
Yeah.
Okay, so that means really it is, right?
No.
And I think, I know.
That's not what it means.
Right, right. It doesn't.
I mean, you just have to explain it better, you know, I think.
Sure,
but legally, you tell me, we
yes.
want the information if it's available.
And I'm using crude language right now, not trying to be
totally
explanatory.
Long debate. But,
that was kind of the overwhelming takeaway. And that, like I said, I did that just for myself. I didn't publish it or anything like that. It was just I kind of get a feel for what other people think this means. What are you hearing when I really say it like this? And that was the takeaway, and that kind of, it just concerned me.
So,
like, well,
so just getting back to the rule.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine. But the point that I want to raise to everybody's attention is that when the group of SMEs from Friction Ridge got together, they were very concerned, as are we, about how one, especially in Friction Ridge, how one holds some of the agencies that aren't accredited to any sort of expectations about anything at all, up to and including even having an SOP, if we don't marry this license to something.
Yeah.
And the only thing out there that people felt was appropriate would be these standards. And so if we have a lot of hesitation because they're for the reasons y'all described, then my real question, and this is not going to make IAI, Texas IAI, happy at all, is like, are we really ready to launch this program? Because if we don't have another way to evaluate what the agencies are doing, then we have no real quality hook at all. Proficiency testing, that would be it, the proficiency testing that's available, I mean, there are whole articles about those public defenders from Chicago taking and passing those PTs, so that's not a great, you know.
Were there three documents that we had listed for latent proofs? Can we just do two of the three and not include the conclusion one right now? Because there is still so much back and forth, because it's not even, like, pending.
As far as I know, so the other two were at the SDO level, open for comments, and they were small documents. And when I looked at it, it didn't seem like they were really. I don't know how much comments they would receive from it. But I just know that conclusion, like even within my department, like we're not in consensus right now.
Yeah.
And as to what
I don't think we are.
Yeah. So.
Just a step back though, and question more to yours, and step back to more of a foundational level. Since you're the ones, you're creating these requirements for your own voluntary license, right? Rather than relying on a third party's requirements, I mean, couldn't you just create your own internal requirements to say that if you want to reach this voluntary license for Texas, you have to show conformity with our own internal standards?
We could. I would have to hire a SME who would have to run that program. We do not have even close to the bandwidth to do it with the current resources. It would have to be contracted, and I'd have to find somebody who would be willing to go around and evaluate how the agencies are doing.
All right, just smile. I'll do it.
No, for real. I mean, that's what we have.
No, I understand.
There a previous, like, SWIG version that was still okay but less controversial that there could be
it? But I think it was only less controversial because it was not that was shot follow, right? But the SWIGs did not have the 5-bin conclusion.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, but I mean, if we're saying you do have to follow this SWIG.
We're not going to the SWIGs.
Okay.
How would you be able to verify that they're following those standards? You almost have to do an assessment like a mini accreditation, right?
I think that's what you need. Yeah.
Well, right, but it would be not creating our own program. So what Aaron's suggesting is essentially creating a program that is like a mini accreditation, to your point. And basically creating it from scratch, right? So it's not to say that we couldn't do that, but financially, I don't know how much.
Yep, the legislature, right?
Yeah.
you
know, I really don't, like, to get somebody to do those audits, because, I mean, I don't know how many.
Especially for every business.
Well, right, but even
well,
just
but this one's specific, though.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Because this one, the other ones, you can still rely on the accreditation part. Right, with the voluntary stuff.
But what about digital? Digital is the same, and there were way more documents that they had to follow in digital, right?
But they also have other ways of evaluating competency for, like, all those certifications that they do and stuff. And there wasn't, if you recall, in Latents, y'all recommended the commission that they not require certification
from the accredited
for accredited labs.
Yes.
I mean, I guess that's not relevant, though, because you still have your
accreditation. You have the accreditation.
The real issue is for the agencies that are not accredited, what do we do?
How do you make sure that they have a quality system robust enough to make sure they're doing good work?
Right. So the answer to your question, Mary, is we could create our own thing. If we were to do that, though, there's a question about whether we should be ISO accredited in order to administer something like that.
To me, it kind of comes back to, like, you know, again, and this is kind of going tangentially, but back in the day with accreditation, you had the ASCLAD lab legacy system, right? And it was standards that were created by forensic examiners for forensic laboratories, and a lot of them made sense, right?
And then they made the move to ISO 17025, and you had to square off a peg mm-hmm. to make it fit in a round hole, right? And we've gone down that road, and it's worked out, right? But then you look at it conversely, like the NAME system, they designed that, you know, medical examiners designed that accreditation system for medical examiners. They don't care that it's not ISO, right? They're the ones that are saying, these are the standards you've got to follow, right? And they're held in the same level in terms of, like, what is acceptable, right, in terms of, like, court acceptance, et cetera. So sometimes I almost say it may be better to create your own as long as it's specific and held to a high standard, you know, and maintain that rather than trying to conform to somebody else's system mm-hmm. just because then it creates a broader conformity. So, I mean, that's just my two cents.
Okay, so it sounds like we kind of need to go back to the drawing board on Friction Ridge a little bit. So I need to think about how we pull that out. But everybody's okay with the digital work still, right?
I get my own, because digital still had other documents that the lab had to show conformity to. None of them seemed overly controversial to me or whatever. They seemed pretty basic. But my question, like, how are you guys going to determine whether or not an individual lab conforms to those? Is it just an SOP review? Or is it something more, like, do you actually have to look at casework?
I mean, we're going to have to hire somebody to do that,
yeah.
too, anyway. The difference
yeah.
is that we have what we're measuring them to already laid out there. We're not creating a program.
Right.
But, yes, we will have to hire somebody who will make these determinations on our behalf. Somebody with subject matter expertise.
That's a big change in the scope of what a license means, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As for the accredited laboratories, the accrediting body is a lot of heavy lifting in terms of the
yep.
management system. Doing this with these unaccredited disciplines, if does that make someone with a license as the Forensic Science Commission saying that means that person's good at their job?
We never say anybody's
well,
good.
I know, but
they gave me a license.
That's not a thing we say generally. But so the options are a couple. Right now, the legislature has exempted from the accreditation requirement Friction Ridge and Lake.
Right.
Unless and until that changes, it's all really subject to a voluntary scope. The easiest thing would be to require accreditation. That meets with huge pushback in these two communities in particular, especially smaller law enforcement agencies because they can't afford it. But they do want an individual credential and have sought that for a long time. Texas IAI doesn't like the fact that, you know, their colleague down the hall and sees drugs, has a license, and gets up there in court and talks about having a license, and they, because they're in Friction Ridge, don't have the option for any of that. So it's like it almost feels like a unfair, unequal, yeah. So they wanted us to create a voluntary license, which is how we got here. The legislature allows specifically for this in statute. And so then y'all were here for the creation of this. We gathered the subject matter experts. They recommended this. This committee approved it. It went up to the commission. There was a strong sense that there had to be some measure of quality for the entity in order to issue a license.
Yeah.
And so that's how we ended up with it.
Anybody can go and take a test. We pass the test. I mean, the whole board is really good test takers.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. You know, but the important thing is, are they doing the quality work? Are they following the quality practices?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you ensure that for the others?
Yeah, so, I mean, keep in mind, this is a proposed rule that's already been approved.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to put it back on the commission's radar for reconsideration, we can do that.
It's also out for comment, so it can the rule can be edited to
mm-hmm.
commented on.
I'm not personally ultra concerned with it, but I mean, if other people have concerns about that the standards have not been, you know, adopted, then sure, there may need to be something to allow for, you know, either specifying specifics or as they become standards language.
There also was a shift that happened between when we last met, when they were on the subcommittee's website as proposed rules, and then they moved to the SDO. And so that, although it's a positive development in some sense from the OSAC perspective, it does jumble things a little bit from the perspective of how much change will happen to that document between, you know, now and 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So that is a valid concern, for sure. And one thing, you know, if we say, you know, standards specify on the OSAC, I'm sorry, on the commission's website, then we have better ability to gauge how far along are these things. Are they ready for implementation? What parts of this can we make optional or not because we believe that there may be changes? We would have a little more control over that that way. I'm just not sure, and I really need to actually talk with Vina about this because I haven't introduced this issue to her, whether there is a question about sufficient notification in the rules. So what this is it's a federal standard that we are requiring compliance with in order for people to get licensed under this voluntary program. So nobody has to do it to practice in Friction Ridge or digital. In fact, they could go their entire career and never do it unless the legislature changes the law. But the question is, can the commission say in the rule, we, you know, and the applicant will show that their agency complies with the OSAC registry standards listed on the commission's website, or do we have to say this standard and this standard and this standard?
I think you can reference what's on your website.
Okay. Well, then we
have to think about a little more.
Yeah. No, but I mean, if we can go that way, if we feel like it's legally acceptable, then that might be.
Would that still require a rural revision to put that language in there?
Yes, but I think we can do it in the comment.
In the comment. Just to be clear, we have already done that generally. So for all the voluntary forensic disciplines, we have a general rule that says employing laboratory quality requirement for forensic analysts. And we say any applicant for a forensic analyst license under this section, under our voluntary rule, must comply with laboratory requirements, comply with specific standards applicable to the applicant's forensic discipline as published on the commission's website and updated January 15 of each calendar year. And this is basically the last section of that specific proficiency testing requirements.
What's the number on that? I'm sorry.
That is H under PT requirements.
But let me think about it a little more.
Yeah. So we have that already in our language. So that answer to that question will be important because it already.
It's 651.
That is under 651.222, our voluntary.
Which one?
But that's just for
the proficiency testing.
That's just for PT. So I think what Sandy's raising is that.
Can we generally say it?
Where we reference the other latent. I'm trying to see what it's like. Where is it? Yeah, it's OSAC 2022-S.0012. That's the one you're talking about. Oh no, that's PT. There's another one that we reference where I think what you're trying to say is like that one's probably going to change, so maybe we want to give ourselves some flexibility.
Right? I think we need to give ourselves flexibility.
But can I just ask Donna, isn't firearms like considering that same kind of matrix?
They backed off of it in the most recent OSAC. We have that, like it's part of the definition of inconclusive.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
Is that like, but that's the same for them. It's part of their definition of inconclusive that you might be leaning one way or the other, or you could be smack dab in the middle. But the bottom line is it's all under this umbrella.
Right. But I'm just pointing out that, excuse me, when it gets adopted, you're an accredited discipline, you're going to have to do that.
The firearms OSAC documents that are coming out are not leaning that way anymore.
Okay.
The last time I saw the draft, it was not that way. I do have a question about once, let's say down the line we want to add. If we add something, or you guys add something to
hold
the
on,
website.
Hold on 1 second. I don't think. So if Aaron leaves.
Oh, we have to stop talking.
Well,
can we just take a break?
Emily's here.
Oh, Emily's the vice chair, right.
Yeah.
So can you.
You got the hat.
Got it.
Okay.
If y'all add a new rule to the website that you want labs to follow, or the people who are applying for voluntary licensure, if you want to them to follow this rule too, and they're already licensed, how long do they have do we need to address that in the rule? How long do they have to adopt that? Because it takes time, right?
And then what if they choose not to adopt another standard?
Right. then they lose their license, right? Does that need to be addressed?
No, I mean, we're not going to revoke people's licenses for if we add a standard that they... I think that we probably just need to address the question of can we make reference generally to compliance with standards and post them and have those be the federal... standards, and then we'll have to figure out the best way to implement it. Because I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to. I mean, the only other way to do it is what Aaron suggests, which is we create our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And don't. But I mean, I don't know that anybody's going to like what we create any more than what OSEC has. I mean, you might even
like it less.
Well, right, because those are consensus. Documents.
Because I guess, so if you're not going to revoke someone's license and they choose not to adopt, but that, to me, that's sort of misleading for somebody from the public to like look up and go, oh, this licensee follows all these rules. But maybe they don't.
Don't we require the accredited disciplines? Don't we require them to follow it or specify that they,
it's
why they can't?
It's voluntary for now.
Lynn, we don't name the standards specifically in the rulemaking. That's why I was like confused.
There's,
we do not name them specifically. We only name the PT ones specifically. The ones that you're talking about are already referenced on the website, and that was because Dr. Kerrigan asked us to make that change so that we can be fluid in what we're asking.
All right. Well,
but we do need permission from Vina, our new lawyer. We need your advice on whether or not that's okay.
So we will make
so,
sure.
So, yeah. I thought that was the case, but I wasn't confident enough to say.
Well,
whether.
We still have the PT one here.
Yes, we do reference the PT one specifically. Is everybody okay with that, though? The PT standard.
I think that
one's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
Is that what that, right? That
hmm?
Was the
agenda. This is...
And we're...
Are you in GoVenda?
No, I can't.
Are you still getting
it? Yeah,
I still. Okay.
So we can take a look at the other thing that gives me a little bit of pause is that we reference sections 4.2 and 4.3 of the standard and what happens if the subsequent revisions, which is in like full form.
Right.
Yeah.
It's ages that where we are talking
about. So we will work through it. I think... It's definitely a challenging issue now that these friction ridge ones are going to the SDO too. So I think probably where we should go from here is that these are already, you proposed them.
Last week. Yeah.
So they're out for public comment right now. If we feel like we need to pull them down, we will bring them back and put them back on the agenda for next time. Is that okay with everything?
Mm-hmm. Sandy, does that meet you're the ones that seem to have the most issue with these?
So, no, I was just concerned as to whether or not people could adopt them in part, or does it have to be in full, and the fact that they were not on the registry yet,
mm-hmm.
and where does it land? But if we're not going to require it now, until it sounds like we're going to further discuss,
mm-hmm.
if the language commits us to specific documents, but it sounds like the language is loose enough that it doesn't commit us into anything we put onto our...
And assuming Vina's
okay with the way we've done it, and we may consider making a change to the PT one so that it's not specifically named, or at least that the sections aren't called out. If we are okay proceeding that way, then I think the next conversation and what should be on the agenda, I would suggest to you all, is okay, which ones and do we want to put mm-hmm. on the website?
Yeah.
What should we recommend
yes.
to the commission?
Yeah.
And then that way, each step of the process, you all are considering and providing recommendations, and we can put a plan in front of the commission about how we're going to implement this. I think the Friction Ridge community is going to maybe be a little bit irritated because some of them have taken the test and I think they really want to be licensed.
They do.
But, you know, we have to make sure that we're not just like jumping off a cliff with this thing. So, so I think what we should do is, if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, is at the next meeting discuss which standards. And to what extent? Is that okay?
Yes.
Can I go with that?
Yeah.
And if in discussions, I tried to talk to Vina about everything I thought we needed to talk about, but we will go back and make sure that this is okay. You know, that we have these federal standards, that we're maintaining and are referencing the rules to them. As long as that's okay, then I think we can really sink our teeth into the substance of this and be thoughtful about what we're asking for from people. Is that, you know, so that we can consider
yeah.
potential impact. Because it doesn't help to have a licensing program that nobody signs up for because they're like, oh, I'm not doing that.
Right.
Yes,
it's
agree.
Too
yeah.
too heavy of
mm-hmm.
a lift.
Or the person might be the individual really wants a license, but their lab's not on board with adopting
yeah.
the
mm-hmm.
standards.
Right.
Any other discussion on item 6?
Yes, we have to talk about the next steps, and we're going to talk about this at the next meeting, but also the next discipline that we're going to embark on, which would be crime scene investigation and crime scene reconstruction, and what we're going to do there, whether we're going to reconvene the...
We had a group of all kinds of folks. The Texas Rangers were there. Judge Herbie was there. We had people from other states who were crime scene reconstruction experts, like Kenny Martin, a whole bunch of people, Chelly Rossi from Montgomery County. And we haven't had that group meet in a while, but if we were going to start, or when we start talking about how to approach this with crime scene, we need to bring that whole group back together or something similar. Because with crime scene, as much or more than anything else, it really is law enforcement that's out there on the ground in the vast majority of circumstances. I mean, I know a couple labs have a crime. I mean, you guys have an accredited crime scene unit. You all are
no.
not yet.
We don't.
We
turned it over to the Rangers. We don't do
it
anymore.
I thought you were going to go back out on scene.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Rangers have to be involved. The representatives from different sides, you know, sheriffs and cities and all that. So we can go about trying to bring everybody together again, get their feedback if that's what y'all want to do, or we can try to work on fleshing out the Friction Ridge and digital a little bit more before we head down the crime scene path. The crime scene path to me is the most challenging. Because
yeah.
I don't even know how you PT folks that
yeah.
are...
Or
I mean,
how
you
determine who's a forensic analyst. Like, who does forensic analysis that's a crime scene
yeah.
investigator?
But, I mean, maybe we can at least start on that part before we're trying to actually flush out rules, but, like, kind of try to start with the definitions.
Okay.
Right?
We have
definitions,
yeah.
but
yeah.
do we really have definitions? You just
One thing I could do, Lynn, is... there was a proposal that they came up with that the crime scene working group had
mm-hmm.
on what the requirements should be and what the definitions were of crime scene investigation and crime scene reconstruction.
Those are in our rules. I mean, the
mm-hmm.
definitions are in our rules, but the proposal,
mm-hmm.
we do have that. We could bring it back. Do you know, let's take a look at it. That's sort of where we left that group, is they came up with what they thought would be a good idea. And then we started on the path.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anthropology, document mm-hmm. exam, you know, and now we're sort of coming back to crime
yeah.
scene. And I think the more collaboration and buy-in that we can get, the more successful it will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a desire to do it. It's just people want to know, like, okay, what does this mean for our agency?
Right.
What does it mean? You know, how do I achieve this? How are you going to test me? You know, why do I have to learn statistics? That's ridiculous. You know, all that kind of stuff.
I think you're right in that it probably would be a benefit to at least get the ones that are currently in the process a little bit more onto the finish line before starting to tackle that one, right? And there's probably not as much, you know, people asking for it right now as you're getting in the other disciplines, so at least try to get something to completion and
mm-hmm.
then try to tackle that as well.
I think there was some precedent, too.
Exactly,
yep.
Yeah.
Okay, we can certainly do that.
Are we getting asked for it? Is there...
When you go to Texas IAI, how much is it the crime scene people?
I mean, they all took the test, the pilot
right.
exam. But I'm asking, more Latents and Digital are asking, because they know we did the rulemaking
yeah.
and they were at the meetings, and they're like, when can we get our licenses?
Mm-hmm.
And I published the rules, so they're going to be anticipating the license. We need to work out the OSAC standards stuff, probably, because they're going to want to apply once the rulemaking's out there.
And we had, at our last meeting when we were in Dallas, the digital folks from GPS,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. which was super helpful.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And to be completely honest, I didn't even understand that there was a whole operation outside of the digital folks in the lab.
Yes.
So that was good information.
Yeah.
So I think what do you think, Mr. Chairman?
My thing is I would like to try to get something off the table, you know, get it to completion, right? There's a lot of kind of spinning plates right now, and it's hard to keep things in my mind even as to what's spinning. So my recommendation would be to clear the board with the license for the latents and for digital. Before we go down the road of crime scene reconstruction, or crime, is that what it is? Crime scene,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Crime scene processing or something.
No, processing is like,
oh,
investigation.
Thank you for that.
So,
thank you. I forgot the word.
We can wait till July then for crime scene.
Would these, with the public comment period and everything else in terms of this, would these then be finalized by July?
Hopefully, yeah. It depends on you all. Depends on.
Well, let's say that if these are clear
yes.
by July, then we can
yeah.
we can do that. Do I need a? Does anybody want to make a? Does you have to make a rule or motion on any of that, or is it just okay to just have an agreement?
Well, I would.
We got rules now.
No, you can make a motion to put the crime scene program development on the agenda for the July.
Can I make a motion?
Quarterly
as
meeting.
Chair,
so I'm saying
somebody,
somebody.
Else, right.
You can ask for that motion, and then somebody can second it, and then we will hold it until then.
Okay.
Is that
under Robert's rules, the chairman can actually make a motion.
Okay.
Committee.
I generally don't.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I ask
yeah.
for motions, and I just yeah. So I.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
four times a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the next one in April.
Yeah, but we're saying
skip
the
April.
So, is there a motion to table the crime scene voluntary license until our said July,
mm-hmm.
July 2023? Anybody want to make that motion?
Do it. Contribute.
Okay, and I've got a motion by Angelica. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Got a motion and a second. All in favor? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. That will be tabled until July at the earliest.
And so staff's instructions on this agenda item otherwise are to come back next time with a proposal for how to handle those OSAC registers.
Just, I'm not sure if people are aware, but we have a complaint about a friction bridge that hopefully we're going to be issuing a report on. It's going to like lay all this out, hopefully, and hopefully it'll be by the next meeting. It might be informative.
Yeah.
We'll try to like include y'all in the drafts and stuff. So see, I don't know if y'all knew that, but there you go.
Well, it's the two big,
what's that?
The two big heads on opposite ends have finally come together.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're having a big, two big heads coming together.
Yeah.
Exactly. It appears to be on one of those prints, right? The marginal ones where this is informative. I mean, we don't know yet because there's a whole issue about what they were looking at. We're going to solve that.
It's nice collegial discussion.
Huh? Yeah, anyway.
So we will have a report that will... the first report we've ever done on friction ridge in the history of the commission.
Okay.
So it's a big deal.
Oh, wow.
It basically says, hey, look at this and analyze it against the OSAC standards just to see, like, see what it says, because it's a close call.
And it's, doesn't it also introduce a whole inconclusive component to it?
Yes.
Very much so.
That's
yes.
Very much. Inconclusive. Like, and I think that the firearm complaint has an inconclusive component. Like,
I just say, as a lawyer, I like that. I like that range because it's informative for legal people. I know it's a pain for you guys, but for us prosecutors, we'd rather you say something that
we won't. Because for what it's worth, as defense attorney, what you were saying resonated with me a lot. I know it's my job to explain to a juror, it doesn't mean it's a match or it doesn't mean it's conclusive, but
right.
Jurors do, like you said, put
yes.
a lot of weight into the probably.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
probably
yeah.
amount of
yeah.
weight.
Yeah.
That's the other perspective. Defense attorney, that's the better term. Instead of the other perspective. Defense perspective versus the prosecutor's perspective. That's
what I try
to take into consideration.
Well, I mean, first of all, well, that's sort of neither here nor
right.
there in a lot of ways, but the issue around inconclusives is, I mean, we, at the Academy meeting, I have a talk called The Trouble with Inconclusives, which is all on this subject about how hard these issues are. And how we've seen it from DNA, firearms to friction ridge, how hard that term is.
Mm-hmm. And it means something different with all the different disciplines,
mm-hmm.
too.
Right. So, back to what we were talking about, we will get you a proposal.
As part of that proposal, can y'all do that presentation, or at least of the what you've got in terms of what the group is recommending in terms of, you know, the definitions, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm not talking about crime scene.
Okay.
I was talking about working out this question of
yeah.
which friction ridge and, you know, OSAC
standards. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think we're going to hold crime scene till July altogether
right.
based
yeah.
on the motion that you just... So next week we'll focus on implementation of the rule that is currently proposed and out for public comment. That's what we will focus on,
okay.
if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yes. Anything else on item 6?
I don't think so.
Item 7, update on exemption from accreditation and licensing requirements for NIBIN suitability and NIBIN entry.
This is just to update y'all on what was published, because we did a tiny bit of wordsmithing post our meeting last time and what was
okay.
approved by the commission. I know Donna and I had a little bit of back and forth just because she helped me a little bit with the language, and also Deborah did as well. Does anybody have any further comments on this?
I don't know if Deborah's office looked at it, too. And so we run all of our work by the governor's office, and they reviewed this and the other one, and they didn't have... if they had comments, they were very minor and non-substantive. They may not even have had any.
They didn't have any.
Was the additional language of the for any other discipline, was that the part that was added, or, you know, the request for exemption? Item B, line B.
It was more around the physical modification.
Okay.
I think, you know, Lynn and Robert and I kind of went back and forth on what physical modification meant, and then I had to ask Donna some questions on what does physical modification mean firing it and things like that, and because that was just due to my lack of understanding of what she does with the weapon, I think, and then she helped me, Deborah and her helped me understand exactly what happened.
I feel like it was the other than what occurs during the act of testifying.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah.
Okay.
I think you're still going to get questions, but.
Yeah, we added that in because I think it only said if no physical modification occurs. Right. And I'm like, well, some physical modification occurs. Like, they have to, like, fire it, right?
Right.
They're going to.
Yeah.
And I think we had a couple of law enforcement agencies, maybe Arlington PD, I don't recall, but they had been they had sort of been asking about this, and I'm sure San Antonio PD will be interested in this as well.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I would assume so. I mean, because like I said, they are performing these. And, you know, did y'all get anything in terms of, is this out for public comment right now?
It is, and we did have some people realize they don't need to be licensed because of it. Like, they have people only doing NIBIN entries with federal equipment and stuff like that, like, for the FBI or whoever.
ATF.
ATF. I'm sorry, ATF.
But the, well, I think that there are a lot of agencies that appreciate that this is in here because the reason, if you recall, that we got to this is that you all were saying, there's all these PDs doing this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have a way to take it from them, to
right.
take this work from them.
Right.
And that was really the main point. It's like, it'd be one thing if we could handle it
right.
capacity-wise, but we can't. So, here we are.
Okay. Anybody have anything else on seven?
Actually, I have a question. So if we have a NIBIN, we'll call them a NIBIN tech, who's only doing a NIBIN, who fits this category, therefore does not need the license. Will they still, let's say they currently have a license, would they be able to retain that license, or would it now have to be, take this food for thought?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't adjust in their license, because
I think if the scope of activities of what they're doing and they're not trained to do anything else but that, and they're not, like, are they a trained, my question would be, what are they signed off for casework to do, and do they do any other casework besides only NIBIN entries? Like, because if they're going to go, so say, if they're going to be asked about their license in court, are you a firearms examiner? Like, do you want them to answer, yes, I'm a firearms examiner?
What about
no? So you don't want them to have a firearms license. That's what my conversation was with the lady at Montgomery County. I forget what her name is.
They have a technician license.
Huh?
Let's say they have a technician license presently. So there are a couple of places, not just Fort Worth, that have this situation where they have a firearms technician who they do NIBIN entry. They do basically they have to test fire to do NIBIN entry.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not do a functionality test, but if they don't do a functionality test, then they are in this category where they're literally just doing test fire for NIBIN and entering the NIBIN.
Yeah, I mean, I think my folks, we do alterations to the weapon. Like, if we get it and it doesn't work, they will fix it. That takes it out of here, right? But I'm under the impression that if we didn't do that, they would fall in here and would no longer be licensed.
Yeah.
Well, they would have the option to. I don't think that they would have to maintain a license, but I think that.
But that would be. Wouldn't that be a voluntary license and then not applicable? And we don't have a mechanism.
But they're working. But they are working for an accredited laboratory, right? This was all for the things that are currently being done outside of our current scope of the quality systems, right? So we have unaccredited police departments, essentially, law enforcement agencies that were doing NIBIN entry, so they're not falling under the Texas Forensic Science Commission's purview, right? But when you look at the letter of the language, they should, at least the way it was written, you know? And so that was what brought the question up. I think if you're already working for an accredited laboratory, you know, you're already kind of complying with those, so I don't think it really falls under the voluntary part.
So to be clear, this exemption applies to accredited. That's why we had to make the exemption. So the exemption applies to accredited labs that are accredited firearms sections, right?
So it's an accredited.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have had to do the exemption at all.
So well, I think what will happen to, like, at a practical level is the people who are licensed as firearms techs right now will go through their expiration date, and when they go to renew, they won't need to renew. We'll probably advise them, if you're only doing NIVIN entry, then you do not need a license. And but the question I think you're asking is, well, what does that really leave for firearms tech? And you're saying that there are still things that a firearms technician will mm-hmm. do that are beyond NIVIN entry and short of firearms analysis.
Yes, or, and we do our correlation reviews as part of NIVIN as well, but that's not under here as an exemption. So
right.
that is
so
there
that makes sense mm-hmm. if they're going to retain a license. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I know others that, for example, Fort Worth, like I know that their firearms technician only does NIVIN entries. And the physical modification thing, I know there will be questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think
we
anticipate to make it go.
Yeah,
take out the piece to make it go. Is that a physical modification?
I think we settled on the fact that there are going to be questions, and there's no way we could draft the language to where we carve out every single physical modification. I mean, that's going to happen to the gun. That's.
I think, but you were saying the answer to that is yes.
Right.
That,
the exception would be the magazine, even though it's not technically part of the gun. I think it's still like a normal person. Process of firing a semi-automatic weapon is going to have insert the magazine. That would be okay, because there are some guns that have the magazine disconnects, and if you don't put the magazine in, you can't
fire.
So if you're doing more than that, if you're putting in another piece to make it work,
But Donna, am I correct whenever when I'm answering a licensing question about the scope of activities that are included in firearms analysis, basically, when someone asks me whether they should be licensed if they only do NIVIN entries, what I do is I show them the statute mm-hmm. and I say, does your firearms examiner do anything that's covered by the scope of activities described here in the firearms examiner licensing thing? And
okay,
I show them the rule.
Yeah.
And I say, if they do anything that's covered by them, then they need to have a license.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just point to the rule.
Yeah.
And then I show them the NIBIN exemption. I say, if they only do something that's covered under there, then that is what is exempt.
Yeah.
And that's literally the only advice. I'm really not supposed to be giving them advice anyway, but I show them where the rule is. And so if they're doing anything outside of, like what you described, if they do one thing that might cross the line that's outside of it, then they need to have the technician's license. And so that's why Donna's people probably all still need to have a license, because if they cross over to start doing technician work, then they need to have a firearms technician license. The people that we're talking about probably never needed to have a license anyway, but we carved out an exemption to provide clarity for these agencies that are doing work for the ATF on ATF equipment to help facilitate identifications that happen for investigative agencies primarily. Lynn, am I right?
So some of them have ATF agreements for the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Some don't.
Some
like,
don't. Okay.
That's a whole other thing.
Michelle,
but,
you probably know more about this than I do.
But that's a whole different question. But I think the main thing is, if you are modifying the weapon for any
mm-hmm.
man, putting a magazine in, or firing it for NIVIN purposes, it's a physical modification that would require a technician license. But anything short of that, if you're just doing NIVIN test fires and entry, then this applies. And I think that the law enforcement agencies that came to us about this understand that.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, even the ATF, that's what they do.
Yeah.
They just fire
mm-hmm.
it, and if it doesn't work, they give it back.
So, also, honestly, on a practical level, like some of these people, they had a license and they thought they needed a license. They just wanted to renew their license. They,
mm-hmm.
the people, the the individual was like, I can't have a license anymore. Like, why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just on a personal level.
They're
like, why can't I have a firearms license?
Talk about some form of grandfather.
And so they were like, well, can I get a license in Leighton Prince then, or something else? And so I'm like on the phone, like, well, are they a Leighton Print examiner? Like, oh my god, no. And like, I get it that they don't want to, like, yeah, I just was like, oh my gosh. But I get it on a personal level. Like, they worked hard to get the license and they got it whenever they were grandfathered in, and they didn't, you know, they were always trying to work with them. But Yeah. They weren't a firearms examiner, though. And they weren't a late print one either, so I was like, they can't have a license. Like, they can't. And I was talking with the boss, and I was like, do you want this person to be in court? And asked about, like, when's the last time did you do a firearms analysis? You know, like, and then have them answer no, and then they have a firearms license? Like, this...
Yeah, that is
like the key question. Like, and then she's like, "Oh yeah, you're right."
Yeah, that is
just like, okay.
The flip side of wanting.
I was like, I want to help her, but
if you're credentialed but you don't do the casework, then you can get yourself crosswise.
Your firearms technicians testify that it's a functioning firearm, or does that go to the examiner?
That goes to the examiner. Yeah, under the definition, if they made that determination,
right.
they would need an examiner license.
Maybe a dumb question, and especially because it sounds like maybe this modification issue isn't as much of an issue as it sounds, but what if they guess wrong? Is that like up to a court to exclude it because somebody modified it too much when they did the test firing, or is it up to, you know what I mean? If we're not allowed to advise them, or if the commission's not allowed to advise them, how do we maintain that standard?
So we're not allowed to give people legal advice, but that's a little bit different than somebody calling and saying, do I need a license? We can help walk them through that.
Okay.
That's okay.
So then if a potential modification happened, which again I realize now sounds like isn't super ideal, is that a court thing? Is that a, you know, commission thing?
So what would happen is you'd go to 3801 of the Code of Criminal Procedure, which says thou shalt not hold thyself out as a forensic analyst.
Okay.
If you're not licensed. And so what you would do is you'd come into court as the lawyer, the defense
mm-hmm.
lawyer, and say, I'm challenging.
That's a Daubert thing. Okay.
Yeah.
It's
Daubert.
Yeah.
This person's not. You should not allow them to testify, Judge, because they're in violation of 3801.
I would assume somebody, too, if they found out you could make a complaint to TSC
yes.
and
mm-hmm.
go that route as well.
That would be, I mean, that would be another thing. But in the context of a criminal action, it would be Daubert.
It's kind of like up to the lab. I mean, they assign them, that job, and now all of a sudden their license is not valid. You understand what I'm saying? It's because they got denied the job.
So we can discuss how
okay.
to handle the off-ramping of
gotcha.
These folks.
Okay.
We should probably... what I hear is that y'all are interested in the off-ramping of these folks, so I would suggest that we add this as a subject to discuss at the next meeting, and that we come back with clarity about what we're going to say. We should maybe put something on the website that's clear about...
licensees that
what happens if you were a firearms tech but now you don't need the license. I think with the document examiners, when the accreditation rule was removed, we called them inactive is what I recall. But we'll have to
okay.
Mm-hmm. And we put a specific note that said this person's license is inactive due to the fact that the accreditation requirement has been removed. Language.
Yeah. Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
we will need to come back and let you know how we're going to off ramp.
Off ramp those
yeah.
that are currently licensed that petition may have.
Yeah, that strictly meet that
mm-hmm.
okay.
So we did that for Trace, right? Or no, I'm sorry. That was a colleague. I'm looking at his information. Had a trace analyst license,
mm-hmm.
and is also a pertinent examiner. And then something happened in the trace. I think he just stopped doing what constituted literally a license.
Trace
or a trace analyst.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's only late in print and does only like collect. That's whenever we changed that thing to from collect that collection only doesn't constitute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Examination.
Yeah.
So when we made that change, it took away his license totally because he's a late claim examiner otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I'm looking at on the website, it doesn't say.
What is it listed
as? It just says.
Inactive or?
It says inactive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says his category was.
Mm-hmm.
And the period of time he was
that.
So I think what we need to, especially now that we have the database, right, we do have a notes function on there that we can put notes on here. So, but the database people suggest that we use those very infrequently. But this would be the sort of thing where we could make a note that says, you know, the document lets it effective. Oh, there is one for a document that says effective July 15th, 2019, forensic analyst performing forensic document examination, including document authentication, physical comparison, and product determination are not required to be licensed by the commission. The commission no longer offers a license in its discipline. So that's a little bit different than taking collection out of Trace, because Trace still requires a license. It's just that the sub, the activity within Trace that he was only doing doesn't require a license.
But that was kind of the same.
So in this one, these folks, they really needed that.
Yes.
But on the Niven thing, I think what we'll do is come back next time with a proposal for how we're going to make it clear that, so that people don't feel like they're being abandoned, essentially.
Right.
Yes, she just read that.
But it is on there.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I can, I'm sorry, Aaron. If you want me to make a note for him, we can make some sort of note. I know who you're talking about, I think, because I've corresponded with either you or him on it.
So I think we'll come back next week with something that's universally applicable to people in that.
The only problem with the Niven people that I will say is they will be very difficult to identify, other than maybe the one person that I know about.
The ones that are currently licensed, you're saying?
I don't know who only does Niven entries that's a firearms tech. I can
maybe reach out to the technician.
I could write all the firearms technicians.
Yeah, it's probably another time.
Yeah.
So we could.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at too originally, is that, you know, if I'm in that role and I'm licensed, then I want to maintain that license regardless, because that gives me up.
I don't think anybody's going to tell me they don't want their license anymore, or that they might not ever do that, do an activity. Mm-hmm. Like, they're probably, their boss is going to say, well, I might have you do that at one point, even though you only do Niven entries now.
Right.
So they're all going to respond probably that they're going to keep their license if I do write them. So I could probably make that note on maybe the one or two people that I had this conversation about, but I don't know that it would be anybody else outside of that.
So if you look...
and those were renewals that the changes have already happened on, so it won't be...
We will figure out the volume, and then we'll come back with the proposal.
Okay, excellent.
Because I'm just looking right now, and there's really only... looks like there are 16 firearms technicians. So that's not good.
Is that something we as committee members could help y'all with, reaching out to people to take stuff off your plate, or no?
No, we don't. We wouldn't want you to have to do that. If you want to, but no.
Yeah. We'll
do it for you.
But thank you for the offer. We will reach out to folks and see and alert them of this change, and then figure out what to do to make sure people feel like the information is accurate on the website and so forth. Okay.
Moving on to 8, update regarding the 88th legislative session. Do y'all have anything?
So far, we haven't seen any legislation involving
the commission,
license,
right,
or really the commission. But I know that this afternoon the TAP is meeting, and they have some monster agenda. And Peter Stout did send out all of the bills that are forensic-y. Anything that has to do with forensic science at all.
Yeah, most dealing with fentanyl and fentanyl test strips and etc.
Right. So during the TACLED meeting, I think there'll be a fairly significant discussion around which pieces of legislation were they to pass would impact the crime, the forensic community of Texas. And then that will continue all the way until the governor's veto deadline, that conversation, which is really only one more TACLED meeting.
Right. Okay. Then moving on to number 9, update from Texas Association of Crime Laboratory Directors. Peter's not here. The meeting is going to be this afternoon. I can just speak real quick that one of the main things is that CACLIT is now an actual legal organization in terms of like a 501(c)(3).
C3.
Organization has a website, so you can actually find this. So that was more for this legislative session, so that staffers and representatives can see that the organization actually is a real entity, and that we're just basically tracking.
The meeting this afternoon is happening in this room.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be well attended.
Anybody have anything else from that one? Okay. And then moving on to 10, scheduling our future meetings, including these dates, which again are probably around the day before the actual commission quarterly meeting. So, does anybody have any issues with those dates as potential future dates for us?
We will be sending out the April, I'm sorry, the October doodle poll to the main commissioners, and once we do that, we will have information for you about October.
October?
Yeah, because well, right like now we have April and we have July, but we're trying to...
A lot of us won't be here. Yeah.
Right, that's what that was my question.
For which
is for our
the October.
The expiring ones?
We fall
well,
off
right
in
yeah.
August.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But until there's a new appointment.
So we would come to the October one.
Good try, man.
You don't get to just
stop
that.
Close, very close.
So will we make the new appointments in July then? If we, in anticipation?
We can talk about it. We'll talk
I guess that might be a Vina question.
Well, we'll talk about what makes the most sense.
Okay.
And part of it is dependent on how quickly we can gather the names from CACLIT.
Right. Okay, so April 13th is the first proposed date. I have no issue with it.
Not yet. I don't think.
Everybody good with that? Do we need to make a motion to meet on that date? Or just let you guys schedule it?
Direct us.
Okay. I'll direct. Do the schedule. And then, other than that, I guess we're open for public comment. Does anybody from the public wish to make any comments? Okay, then, is there a motion to adjourn? Okay. Got a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.